Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jana Vallabha Shri Varadhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Shri Varadhari Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Chari Yamuna Tira Vana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Jana Vallabha Shri Varadhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Shri Varadhari Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Dwaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Prabhupada Kacharya Stota Sita Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Samstapak Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Prabhupada Kacharya Stota Sita Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem se kaho si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadweep Dham Ki Jai. Jamuna Mai Ki Jai. Ganga Mai Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Samveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Devo. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Gaur Premanande Hari Devo. Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gauravani Pacharine Nivashesha Sanyavari Kasatya Desita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30. Descriptions of Adverse Fruitive Activities. Text 5. Naraka. Sta. Api. Deham vai na human tyaktum ichati narakyam nirvrito satyam devamaya vimohita. Narakastopi deham vai.
Narakastopi deham vai.
Napumams tyaktumichati.
Napumams tyaktumichati.
Narakyam nivrito satyam.
Narakyam nivrito satyam.
Deva maya vibohita.
Deva maya.
Narakastopi deham vai.
Narakastopi deham vai.
Napumams tyaktamichati.
Napumams tyaktamichati.
Narakyam nivrito satyam.
Narakyam nivrito satyam.
Deva maya vimohita.
Deva maya vimohita.
Narakastopi deham vai. Napumams tyaktumichati.
Napumams tyaktumichati.
Narakyam nirvrito satyam.
Narakyam nirvrito satyam.
Deva maya vimohita.
Deva maya vimohita.
Vaishnavis. Naraka, in hell, Staha, situated, Api, even, Deham, body, Vai, indeed, Na, not, Puman, person, chaktum, to leave, ichati, wishes, narakyam, hellish, nirvrito, enjoyment, satyam, when existing. Devamaya, by the illusory energy of Vishnu. Vimohita, deluded. Translation. The conditioned living entity is satisfied in his own particular species of life. while deluded by the covering influence of the illusory energy, he feels little inclined to cast off his body, even when in hell, for he takes delight in hellish enjoyment. Please repeat. The conditioned living entity,
is satisfied
in his own particular species of life,
while deluded by the covering influence of the illusory energy,
he feels little inclined to cast off his body.
Even when in hell.
For he takes delight in hellish enjoyment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said that once Indra, the king of heaven, was cursed by his spiritual master, Brihaspati, on account of his misbehavior, and he became a hog on this planet. After many days, when Brahma wanted to recall him to his heavenly kingdom, Indra, in the form of a hog, forgot everything of his royal position in the heavenly kingdom, and he refused to go back. This is the spell of Maya. Even Indra forgets his heavenly standard of life and is satisfied with the standard of a hog's life. By the influence of Maya, the conditioned soul becomes so affectionate towards his particular type of body that if he is offered, "Give up this body, and immediately you will have a king's body," he will not agree. This attachment strongly affects all conditioned living entities. Lord Krishna is personally canvassing, "Give up everything in this material world. Come to me, and I shall give you all protection." But we are not agreeable. We think, "We are quite all right. Why should we surrender unto Krishna and go back to his kingdom?" This is called illusion or Maya. Everyone is satisfied with his standard of living, however abominable it may be. Translation again. The conditioned living entity is satisfied by his own particular species of life, while deluded by the covering influence of the illusory energy, he feels little inclined to cast off his body, even when in hell, for he delights in hellish enjoyment. In 1971, we went with Srila Prabhupada to the Ardha Kumbha Mela in Allahabad at the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna and Saraswati, although the Saraswati is not visible on the surface as a distinct river. And at the Ardha Kumbha Mela, we met many pious people. And one of them was a rickshaw driver. In fact, at the end of the Mela, we went with Srila Prabhupada. We all went by rickshaw with Srila Prabhupada to catch a train to Gorakhpur, which was our next stop. And the rickshaw driver was such a nice person. He was such a devotee. He was so respectful of the devotees, so Krishna conscious, so devotional. And we thought, what a waste, you know, he could join us, he could be part of ISKCON instead of pulling a rickshaw. So at the end of the ride, when we got to the station, I don't know if I was the one, I think I was, but then there probably must have been a translator, because I don't think he would have known English. But anyway, I said, you know, you're so nice and so friendly and so devotional. Why don't you just join us? You know, we'll maintain you, and, you can travel with us, you can serve the devotees, you can serve Lord Krishna. And I thought he would agree immediately. He was so nice. But he said, no, I just got my new rickshaw, and I have to make the payments on it. And, you know, and I have my wife and children. And it just somehow, reading the verse in purport, reminded me of him. Of course, he was pious. He wasn't like a blind materialistic enjoyer, but he was definitely attached. Even though from our point of view, we were thinking, you know, what kind of a life for such a pious soul. But he was thinking, I just got my new rickshaw. You know, things are really going good for me now. I don't want to make him the example, because he actually was a nice person, but that is the influence of Maya, that we become attached to whatever situation we're in. Like it is said, a pauper is proud of his penny. You know, everyone is proud of whatever little they have, and they don't want to give it up. In general, they don't want to give it up. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada preached that you can remain where you are, you can remain what you are, but add Krishna consciousness. Because very few people want to change very few people want to give up what they have. They may want to give it up for something better, but again, under the spell of the illusory energy, they don't realize that Krishna consciousness is the best thing, and that they should immediately give up whatever attachments they have that are against Krishna consciousness for the greater benefit of Krishna consciousness. But they'll give up a job that pays, you know, 500 to get a job that pays 800. But in principle, they don't want to give up what they have. Whatever Maya they have, they want more. But they don't want to give it up. It's a very rare person who has a good balance of pious credits, and also who's not sinful, that can give it up. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, yesham twantagatam papam, that one who's free from sinful actions and reactions, and who has performed sufficient pious activities, can take to devotional service. And here I think of one of our good friends from Bombay. When he first met Srila Prabhupada, he was a very pious householder named Mr. Sethi. And devotees who've spent time in Bombay have met him and know him. So he was living in a suburb called Gorgon. It was actually further from the city than Juhu, but we, at the time, we were all living in the city. And somehow he met Srila Prabhupada, heard about Srila Prabhupada and his work, and invited him to his home. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada saw his apartment and just asked him, what do you do in the morning when you get up? So he said, well, I take my bath. I have a cup of tea and some toast. I read the newspaper. And I go to work. Srila Prabhupada listened, and then he asked his next question. What is the difference between you and a pig? And man, you know, because he was pious, he really took it to heart. And he could perceive that Srila Prabhupada was not an ordinary sadhu that just goes to householders and flatters them so that they'll give him some donation or become his follower. But, you know, he really had a standard of knowledge, and he really, you know, he really wanted to break Mr. Sethi out of his false, illusory routine and bring him to a higher standard. So then Mr. Sethi said, okay, well, what should I be doing? And Srila Prabhupada said that every week you should invite the devotees to your house, organize big Harinam Sankirtan through the town, and then feed them sumptuous prasad. And he did it. Saturday after Saturday, the devotees would come out to Gauragan, and they would do Harinam Sankirtan through the streets, and then afterwards he'd serve them a big feast. And gradually he became one of like the staunchest devotee of Srila Prabhupada, at least from what we would call the congregation. He became one of the staunchest devotees. He was like Hanuman, like what Hanuman was to Ram. He was like to Srila Prabhupada. And he wasn't that well educated in a sense, but he was very intelligent. And he was quite good at what he did. He was a building contractor, and he had quite a good business. And thinking of Hanuman, I recall another incident. Because Hanuman fought for Ram. Of course, he was a staunch devotee. He was ready to do anything for Ram. But he fought for Ram. So later on, when Srila Prabhupada entered the agreement for the land at Juhu, and there was so much so many complications with the landlord because he had taken Srila Prabhupada's money, but he didn't want to actually transfer the land to Srila Prabhupada. And to the contrary, he was trying to drive Srila Prabhupada and the devotees from the land and keep the land and the money. So, anyway, it's a long story, but at one stage, one of Mr. Nair's main accomplices, Mr. Matre, who is the local municipal councillor, he arranged, well, it wasn't quite like that. There was a lot of money paid, a lot of bribes paid, but anyway, Mrs. Nair, with the help of Mr. Matre and other people, got the temple we had built, small temple, semi-permanent structure for the deities of Radha and Krishna, Radha Rasa Bihari, got it demolished. And on the grounds that it was illegal, it was unauthorized, which wasn't really true. So, you know, for a month, we were going and meeting the members of the municipal corporation to get permission to rebuild it. And one fine day, we had a realization that we don't really need their permission to rebuild it. We already had the permission. But, you know, when these evil people came to demolish it, they chose to ignore the permission that we already had, but we don't need to get their permission. We already have the permission. So we're just going to rebuild it. So we had this idea on Friday, on a Friday morning. And I don't know how, but Mrs. Nair got wind of it. She must have had her spies in different places. Anyway, she must have gotten wind of it. But from our side, you know, we went to Mr. Setti because he was a contractor. And in those days, it was very hard even to get the basic ingredients for construction, like cement. It was in short supply, and it was under government quota. And unless you got a permit from the government, you couldn't get cement unless you, like, tried to get it on the black market for exorbitant. So anyway, went to Mr. Setti, and he said, you know, he'll give us whatever we need, and we'll just do it. But meanwhile, Mrs. Nair had gotten wind of our plan, so she went to the court to get an injunction to forbid us from rebuilding the temple until the court case was settled over the dispute about the ownership. So the judge, the high court judge that heard the case had actually been the chief guest at one of our big Pandal programs, and he was but this wasn't a matter of prejudice, this was a matter of, you know, justice. So he said, well, I can't really pass a judgment without hearing from the other side. And by then it was already like about 4 o'clock on Friday. And, you know, there was no way that he could get the other side to appear before 5 o'clock. So he said, you know, I will hear the case Monday morning. You know, I'll issue a summons for ISKCON. I'll hear the case on Monday morning. So we realized, and we also got wind of what she did. Well, not just got wind, I think we got the summons that we have to appear in court Monday morning. So we realized that we have to build this, we have to finish this on Monday morning, because if he grants the injunction, we won't be able to do any more work. So, you know, it took some time, and by, I guess it was Saturday. This is anyway. So we finally got the material, and then Mrs. Nair's lawyer came, that's right, he came to serve the summons. And I didn't want to accept it, so it's like, I was like running away from him, and here was this like very big man in Bombay legal circles with his nice suit and pants and tie, like chasing after me. But anyway, in the end, I let him serve me. And then, so okay, we'll come on Monday morning. We'll see what the position is by then. So then Mr. Matre came, and he said, he came, and Mr. Setti is like a real Kshatriya type, you know, so he faced Mr. Matre. Mr. Matre said, you know, you can do whatever you want, because I'm going to bring 200 gundas. Gundas are like hoodlums, you could say. I'm going to bring 200 gundas in the middle of the night and break down the temple. And Mr. Sethi said, well, that's okay. I'm going to bring 600 gundas, and we'll be waiting for you. And then he told his son. His son was by his side. He said, Bridge Mohan, bring my revolver. And he was serious. So he actually had a revolver at his home, and his son, Bridge Mohan, brought it. And they stood guard, like vigil, like all night long. And nothing happened. No one came. And we just by 8 in the morning, we were, put the last brick in place and were covering it with plaster. And then we went to the court, 10 o'clock in the morning, we had to be at court. And, Mrs. Nair was there with her battery of highly paid lawyers. And then the judge called on us, and because the injunction was to stop us from rebuilding the temple. So the judge said, what do you have to say? He said, well, Your Honor, the temple's already been rebuilt. And we brought pictures. And then the judge turned to Mrs. Nair and her lawyers and said, well, what's done is done. Once the temple is built, the injunction has no value. So now if you want to get rid of it, that's another case. So like case dismissed. So Mr. Sethi, he was a great devotee. And there was one other incident with him that in some way relates to the verse today. So, eventually we got permission, built the temple, and the whole complex with the guest house and auditorium. And then the top floor of one of the towers of the guest house is Srila Prabhupada's quarters. And the quarters they were very nice. The floors were marble, and there were chandeliers on the ceiling, and, carved wood furniture with silk upholstery. Saurabh Prabhu did a very good job. And Srila Prabhupada came up, and he's looking at it. He's very pleased, and I think the devotees felt a little proud. And so one of the devotees said, Srila Prabhupada, these quarters are fit for a king. And Srila Prabhupada was very gracious, but very quietly he said, then where's the queen? a little while ago I met our godbrother, one of our godbrothers, Satsarupa Maharaj, and he said that Prabhupada's reply was like it was so fast. It was like, okay, you're so proud, you built quarters fit for a king, but where's the queen? You've provided everything else, but where's the queen? And he said it was like Groucho Marx, like whatever you said, Groucho Marx would come back with something, smarter to put you in your place. And it reminded me, I thought of it also because of this issue of hell, when the British interviewer, I don't know, some of you probably know the story, but there was a There's a British television personality who is famous for putting down his guests, you know, for being very witty and clever and putting down his guests. And so he invited Srila Prabhupada onto his television program. And Srila and all the devotees are saying, don't go, you know, he's a very treacherous person. He's going to try to embarrass you and humiliate you, you know, don't go. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, he's invited us, we must go. So, you know, as would be expected, the interviewer began in a sort of congenial way, you know, making, you know, some polite small talk, and he said, Swamiji, what is your impression of London? And he was also proud, thinking, you know, the great capital of the British Empire and so many beautiful buildings and Buckingham Palace and so many great parks. And he said, Swamiji, what do you think of our city, London? And Srila Prabhupada replied, London is hell. There's no sunlight here. It is dark and damp. It is like hell. So it was like before the interview could even start in on Prabhupada, Prabhupada totally put him in his place, and he was like completely stunned. He didn't know what to do. It's like he'd been beaten at his own game before he even began. And he was totally flustered. He didn't know where to go. And it was Srila Prabhupada's mercy that Prabhupada saved him. And Prabhupada said, but it is a great people. It is a great credit to the people of London that they could expand such a great empire in spite of living in such a hellish place. So then he was relieved, you know, the tension was relieved, and from then on he was just very respectful of Srila Prabhupada and didn't try to do his usual number. So it was like that, like, you know, even though Srila Prabhupada was so simple and innocent like a child, but if someone was trying to be like mean and nasty with him or like one up him, he would want one up the other person. And if someone was pride, you know, in it, he would also deflate their pride. So, okay, we did it. We really did it this time. We did these quarters. These quarters are fit for a king. All right, well, where's the queen then? You're so proud of yourselves. So anyway, now, coming back to Mr. Sethi, Srila Prabhupada invited Mr. Sethi up to see his quarters, and he gave him a tour. And he said, you know, he showed him, you know, just see what my disciples have done, and all marble floors and carved wood furniture and silk upholstery and chandeliers and a separate room, bedroom, and a big room for meeting people, and a kitchen, and servants' quarters, and secretary's room, and waiting room. And he said, you know, Mr. Sethi, I always wanted you to join us. And you always said that you couldn't really adjust to the life. All we had then was like brahmachari ashram, just sleeping on straw mats on the floor, like as many as could fit in the room. So he said, you could never, you know, you always said you could never live under those conditions, so you come and stay here. And Mr. said, oh no, your disciples have made this for you. No, you come and stay here. I will move somewhere else. So, I don't think Srila Prabhupada expected him to agree, but Prabhupada was making a point that he really wanted Mr. Sethi to help us. And Mr. Sethi did, even until now, he he gives so much money, especially for Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. You know, he and probably disappearance day too. He sponsors a huge feast, and he donated like a beautiful silver or gold arti set for Prabhupada's Guru Puja, and sponsors lots of flowers, you know. And so you know, I think Mr. Seti's happy with his wife and children and grandchildren. They are devotees. They're very Krishna conscious. And so how do we reconcile, you know, statements like we read in the purport, the verse in the purport, with people we meet? Do we say, oh, you know, you're just like a pig in stool. You know, you're like Indra. You're like a pig in stool. You don't know the real standard. You know, you're just in complete maya. I mean, Prabhupada didn't preach to people like that. He would preach very strongly in his books and in his lectures to establish clearly what the highest standard of Krishna consciousness is, and, you know, what the illusory energy is. But when he actually dealt with people, you know, he was very kind to them and very... Of course, he did say what he did to Mr. Seti, but, I mean, he knew what he was doing, and he got a good result. So I think that's also an important lesson. I've also been thinking about Lagos, Nigeria recently, because I met our god brother Sukadev Prabhu, and he's received an invitation to go to Lagos. And on Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja evening in his quarters, I recalled an incident here. I actually spent 2 weeks here when Srila Prabhupada was here in 1973. And he spoke about his relationship with Dr. Mishra, who was actually, you know, he's actually a very learned scholar. He grew up in a Brahmin family that spoke Sanskrit at home. And it's very interesting because there was a gentleman in the gathering in Srila Prabhupada's quarters who later said that he had studied Sanskrit from Dr. Mishra in San Francisco, and he said he was, like, very learned. So as Bhrigupati Prabhu so aptly said, Dr. Mishra was no slouch. But as learned as he was, you know, and as knowledgeable as he was, whenever he would discuss with Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada would always defeat him. You know, Prabhupada would always quote the Sanskrit verse that perfectly defeated what Dr. Mishra said. Dr. Mishra was a Mayavadi. But when Srila Prabhupada was here in his garden and he was talking about his relationship with Dr. Mishra, he said that they were friends. That when it came to matters of philosophy, they would argue very vehemently, but otherwise they were friends. And Srila Prabhupada had cooked for Dr. Mishra when he was sick, and Dr. Mishra gave credit to Srila Prabhupada for, like, bringing him back to health, bringing him back to life, practically, by cooking for him. So Srila Prabhupada said that we were friends. But when it came to philosophy, we would argue very vehemently. So the idea is that on a personal level, you know, if the person is not, like, envious or offensive, we can be friends with them and encourage them, even if philosophically they don't agree with us. And yes?
Books.
Oh. Bhagavati Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada even invited him to be the Sanskrit editor for his books. And at the time, Dr. Mishra declined, which was a decision that he later regretted. Yeah. So we had a very wealthy friend in Lagos. Well, we were invited by Mr. Chanrai. He was like a very good friend. But then he had a friend, I think Mr. Bojwani. Most of the big industrialists and merchants there were Sindhis. And so he invited us to his house. He arranged a program, invited many of the most elite Sindhis, and made very nice arrangements. I gave a talk, and you know, we had kirtan, and then Mr. Bojwani himself asked a question after the class that indicated that he was a Mayavadi. I hadn't known it because he was so polite and cultured. I didn't realize under the surface he was a Mayavadi. So, of course, when he raised the philosophical challenge, we had to meet it and, you know, defeat it. But then I was thinking, you know, what is my relationship with him? You know, because I was thinking about all these things like, you know, one should never engage in any of the six reciprocations of love with a serpent like Mayavadis, and then beyond that, you know, anyone who sees the face of a Mayavadi should immediately take bath in the Ganges. And so I was thinking, well, now what? Now that I found out he's a Mayavadi, now what? And I thought about it, you know, should I like refuse to eat his food? Should I just walk out? And in the end I concluded, no. You know, he was a friend. On one level, he was a friend. He was happy that we were spreading Krishna consciousness. He appreciated our principles. And why should I make a friend into an enemy? You know, I should keep him as a friend. And I think that was definitely Srila Prabhupada's mood when he dealt with them. And most Hindus are Mayavadis, the older ones, who haven't had association with Krishna consciousness from an early age. Most of them are Mayavadis, even if they're sympathetic. So the same thing here. I guess the point I'm making is that there may be very strong statements in the scripture, and Srila Prabhupada also makes very strong statements in his purports, in his lectures, in his morning walk conversations, to establish, you know, the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, to establish clearly what the standard of pure devotional service is, so that we can recognize it and distinguish it from anything that's less, which is everything else. But on a personal level, we should be friendly. You know, we should try to encourage people, whatever their beliefs may be or whatever their attachments may be. And by associating with us, by liking us, and by wanting our association and associating with us, you know, they'll gradually take prasad, they'll hear the holy name, they'll hear the talks, they'll do service, and they'll gradually make advancement. So, you know, we should be conscious of everyone that we meet here, all the more so here, because they'll be sort of judging us by what they experience here. But anywhere we go, you know, on public transportation, in the airport, in the shop, you know, we should always be conscious that we're devotees and that people will form an impression about Krishna consciousness based on their experience with us. And in India, Srila Prabhupada said that there are, you know, that there are Sanskrit scholars, you know, even the Mayavadis, they're Sanskrit scholars. We can never defeat them in argument. can never defeat them in argument, he said, but you can defeat them by your gentle behavior and by your kirtan. So, how can I say, Srila Prabhupada is like a lion. I mean, when he preached, you know, he was like a lion. But, you know, when he dealt on a more personal level, unless the person was directly challenging him, but otherwise, on a personal level, he was friendly. He was very friendly to people. They actually loved them. And they pretty much all loved him. So that is the legacy he's given us. Both the books, of course, the books are the basis. And his example, the way he dealt with people, the way he dealt with situations. And that's also why the books are so important, because the books will say it all. I mean, if you say, sir, you know, you preach to the person and you tell him to surrender to Krishna and he comes out with all of his attachments, and you say, well, sir, you know, actually, you're just like a pig in stool. It might not go over so well. But if you give him the book and he reads, people who are attached to their wives and children and homes are like pigs who are attached to stool. He's not going to argue with you. It's like he won't take it personally. That's interesting. Let me read a little more. And then, you know, by the potency of Prabhupada's books, his words in his books, he can actually relax some of his strong attachments and become more inclined to Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
Just on the last point, even within our own community, the devotees who questioned some of the things that Prabhupada said as being too heavy or all the things, or a famous case is one conscious who everybody knows who brought into that, who said a few years back, how could Prabhupada say that karma schools are like storehouses? How can you say that? The better this does, and within a few weeks they were saying that, Columbine, you know, people started getting killed in school. So the point is that even in our own community, sometimes we think that prophecy is too heavy, even though they're right on the way.
Yes. Yeah, that is. Well, yes, I could say it's unfortunate that devotees, even devotees, lack faith in what Srila Prabhupada said, and certainly, you know, I have faith that whatever Prabhupada said was for the benefit of Krishna consciousness. It's like, you know, phalena parichyate, you judge by the result. So what was the result of Prabhupada's preaching? He changed the world. You know, millions of people became Krishna conscious, and it's going on and on and on, even today, even so many years later. But I think it's also part of our duty as Srila Prabhupada's disciples to try to, I mean, some people you can't convince, but it's also part of our duty as disciples of Srila Prabhupada to try to help them to understand what Prabhupada was doing and not get into a sort of fanatical type of argument, like, yes, no, yes, no, but, you know. Yes?
Maharaj, when you were telling the story, Prabhupada was a TV magnet, back then it was real clever.
Yes, in England.
You were saying, but Prabhupada still was able to counter him.
Yes.
So, my question is, amongst God brothers, supposing that happens, what should be my attitude? Should I be like Prabhupada and beat him to the quip, or take him out of peace and leave him out?
Very good question. He says that, like, when the interviewer in London tried to one-up Srila Prabhupada one-upped him. So what should we do with, like, a god brother? Should we try to one-up him, or should we just be Trinada Pisunichena? I think a lot depends on the God brother and you and the context. I know, I was, at different times, I was quite close to Tamal Krishna Goswami. So his mood was always to one-up the other one. And, you know, sometimes I would say, someone said this to me, and he'd say, well, what did you say? And, they say, oh, you should have said this, you know, you should have, like, immediately put him in his place, you shouldn't have let him get away with that. But, you know, that's Tamal Krishna Goswami, and he's who he is, and I'm who I was, you know. I can't be what he was, you know. So I think not everyone has that ability, you know, to just one-up the other person, but if you do, depending on the situation, you know, it might be worth employing it. You know, if the person is sort of like a little puffed up and needs to be put in his place. But if it's not going to have a good effect, if it's just going to create more tension in the relationship or more bad feelings, then it's better just to let it go. Yes.
Marge, do you think the failure to understand the principle that you were referring to, how a philosophical disagreement shouldn't ruin or spoil a relationship, has been a significant contributing factor to the strained relationships between ISKCON and Ritviks and ISKCON and followers of Narayan Maharaj, or is that a more complicated issue, or how do you feel about that?
I wouldn't say it's that much more complicated. Many of the senior God brothers that I'm friendly with all basically have the same approach that I think we've all come to on our own and then discussed. And that is that, you know, if as human beings they're nice to us, then we should be nice to them on an individual level. But if they try to promote their theory in opposition to Krishna consciousness and loyal adherence to Srila Prabhupada, then we have to refute it. And, you know, certainly if they challenge ISKCON or challenge what Srila Prabhupada said and did as understood by the, you know, consensus of devotees or the leadership of the movement, then we have to meet the challenge. There's no doubt about it. But on an individual level, on a personal level, if someone, you know, belongs to another camp, but they're nice to you, and when they're with you, they just like encourage you in your service and Krishna consciousness, then I think we should be friends with them. Because the whole thing is a very dynamic process. And if we're nice to them, who knows, in the course of time, they may just come closer to us. And they may either leave that camp and join ISKCON again, or they may sort of be in that camp, but also be close to ISKCON and not be part of the sort of aggressive faction of the other camp. Yes, Vavas Prabhu.
You know, all these questions make me kind of think that, as devotees, we still seem to be hampered by conditioning within our life. Because sometimes within our society, you can go to India and you can say, this is an Indian devotee. And you go to America, this is an American devotee. Or this is an Italian devotee. This is a German devotee. It seems like all of us are still somewhat conditioned to our past life or, you know, as a karmi and being raised by our parents. it appears that that conditioning is a very difficult thing to overcome, because sometimes, you know, you're saying some devotees have some ability in a certain way, some don't. It seems that a lot of times those things may come from conditioning, from our relationship to our association.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that that hampers our ability to have faith in Srila Prabhupada's words.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes a devotee is always angry. You know, they're just have anger in them. It seems like that's some kind of condition, because that's not really the natural state. The natural state should be really happy or, you know, satisfied. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to understand this particular point. As a devotee, whatever we've encountered somewhere along the line in our particular life, it seems like we should try to identify it and try to just drop the conditioning that we've been put through and take up the science of Krishna consciousness and really just try to endeavor. You know, like sometimes I've heard devotees say, well, I don't like Indian food. I like Italian food. But is that really what it is? I mean, Srila Prabhupada didn't just give us Indian food. This is like transcendental prasadam.
Yeah.
It's what the spiritual world is about, according to Srila Prabhupada, what I've heard anyway. So it seems to me like we have a difficulty getting rid of our conditioning. And sometimes another devotee may think, well, that's just the American devotee's way of doing it. That's not the way we do it in Europe or in Mexico. We don't do it that way. We don't think like that. We don't do like that. So what is this? My question to you is, what is this all about? I mean, if I'm not going down the road properly, please let me know. I'm just trying to say some of the experiences that I have,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the course of being in Krishna consciousness for several years and experiencing all these different things. Even I know in my particular life, I come from a European background, and as growing up, my mother and father really ingrained it in me that I'm Czechoslovakian. You know, this is where you're from, this is how you should be, and this is how we are. And of course, by some mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, I don't relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't seem anything to me. So I'm just saying, you know, but there's other conditionings that happen. What is this all about?
Well, we're coming from the conditioned stage, and the process of chanting and devotional service in general, but specifically the process of chanting, is meant to cleanse the heart of all the false identifications, Chaito Darpano Marjanam and Sankirtan, not just chanting directly, but meeting people and glorifying Krishna and distributing books. So that, you know, Chaito Darpano Marjanam, that cleanses the dirty things in the heart. And once someone asks Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean, dirty things in the heart? And Prabhupada said, to identify with the body, to think I'm the body, that's the dirt that we're talking about. So we have it. So on one level, we really need to do more kirtan and sankirtan, and that purifies the heart. And I know when you're out there distributing books or chanting on the street, you really do go beyond, you know, the bodily identification. You really do see the people as souls, and you approach them soul to soul. So I think part of the problem is just being too sort of entrenched in our comfortable lives. And the other thing is to associate with more advanced devotees. I mean, when, of course, nobody has the potency of Srila Prabhupada, but even though we were conditioned and neophyte, but by Srila Prabhupada's association and potency, he elevated us. So, you know, associating with more advanced devotees is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. And that's another problem also with being sort of too entrenched in a comfortable life, that you don't really feel the need to associate with more advanced devotees. You don't get their association. Even they're across the street, but you don't take advantage. And I know, again, different senior devotees have sort of picked up on the same idea. Recently it came up in a talk that I had with Radhanath Swami about, you know, he was saying there's the transcendental level and the human level. And the same type of thing that, because I saw he had a lot of friends, even today, who are not really, of course, some aren't Krishna conscious, but they're sympathetic. Some are on different paths. They have different teachers. But he's still friends with them, and by his friendship, they're favorable to Krishna consciousness. And he said, you know, there's like the human level and the transcendental level. And that when Srila Prabhupada would preach on the transcendental level, you know, he was doing so to establish the absolute truth. But the same type of thing, that on a personal level or on a human level, he could be friends with Dr. Mishra or with whoever. So I think, you know, when the girl, and I don't know the girl or the history, but you know, when she says, you know, how could Prabhupada say they're slaughterhouses and they're better than our schools? On the human level, there could actually be some truth to what she's saying, because there has been abuse in our schools and you know, most of us, of our generation, we came out of that education, but we still took to Krishna consciousness. So I think that even in devotees' thinking, you know, yes, in the way we relate to them, there's sort of the human level. I prefer the word personal level, but Radhanath Swami is using the word human level, which comes to the same thing. And there's the transcendental level. So I think that if, you know, if she has something, and she, for all I know, she's like a I don't know her at all, so don't take what I'm saying as relevant to her. But it could be that underneath all of that, that she does, that she's seen something that is, that has some truth to it. You know, that our schools haven't been all that good and their schools aren't all that bad. And in her frustration, you know, she might have sort of lashed out at Srila Prabhupada, which of course, you know, is not appropriate. But if instead of just reacting on that level, oh, you know, she's being offensive to our founder Acharya, and again, I don't know her at all. I have nothing to say about her, but to sort of go to another level and say, well, it's true. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes. You know, we were very immature. We didn't really apply what Srila Prabhupada taught us in the best way, and we did make a lot of mistakes. And, you know, again, on the human level, there are people out there in the educational system that have good values. Now, our Purushottama Prabhu is in the Department of Education for the city of Los Angeles. And they actually think, you know, on a conscious level, they think they really think what to make schools better for the children. And there have been schools that have found that by having only vegetarian menus for the children, they do better, or by taking out the vending machines and doing things like that. So I think if, you know, like if someone has something to say and is really convinced there's some value to it, and if, like, we're very sort of rigid and we don't let her or him express that truth and appreciate the truth that's there, then they'll, like, get more, like, frustrated and just, like, lash out. So, you know, if the person is open to that sort of discussion, we can say, yes, it's true. You know, on a certain level, what you say is true. But on a higher level, we're all in the cycle of birth and death. And we're all going to be slaughtered in time by death. And we're going to take birth again and be slaughtered again. So they are slaughterhouses because they're just letting us continue in the cycle of birth and death. But, you know, Krishna consciousness is teaching us how to escape from the cycle of birth and death, how to get out of the slaughterhouse of the material world and sort of like grant what the truth of what's being said on a human level, but then reassert the truth of what Srila Prabhupada said on the absolute level. All right, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.
Thank you, it was a great question. Welcome.